Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. It's quite sultry here. We're in the middle of July. Joining me today is the author of Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom. Her previous book, Full Body Present, came out a few years ago. In fact, she was on the show back then talking about that book. And both of them talk about integrating with the body's inherent wisdom and how exactly to do this. Both fascinating books, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading the new one, Reclaiming Your Body. Suzanne Scurlock-Durana is, I hope I'm saying that correctly, is
you
one
are.
Of the world's leading authorities, that's good, in conscious awareness. And it's a transformational impact on the healing process. She's been teaching her Healing from the Core curriculum since 1994 and leads workshops and webinars internationally. She also teaches craniosacral therapy and somato emotional release through the Upledger Institute. So it's a pleasure to welcome Suzanne to the day show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Paul.
So it's all within us, isn't it? That's what we teach in Unity, and
yes.
That's what most of the esoteric traditions teach us, that our truth lies within. But so often we're, for one reason or another, disconnected from it, and I guess that's the great journey, you know, is how to reconnect, how to find our centeredness, our wisdom, our beauty again. And so the question is, you know, why do we become so disconnected? And I guess your focus in this second book is on ways we received some kind of trauma, and it doesn't have to always be an intense one, does it? But all of us in some way have had disconnecting or traumatic experiences in our lives.
Absolutely. And I think I've been working with trauma using craniosacral therapy for many, many years. But I even have to say in that field, and I've been in that field for 34 years, teaching for 31 years, that we have such a deeper, refined understanding of what constitutes trauma today than we did those 3-4 decades ago. And even in the psychological world, they're finding exactly the same thing that we talk about in the bodywork world that we talk about in the esoteric world of, you know, places like Unity and in metaphysical training. We now know that trauma can be something as, and it can be anything that causes you to shrink, dissociate, contract, and stay locked down inside in such a way that you can no longer feel your insides to the degree that you could before, thus locking you out of the wisdom of your own body.
Yes. And we tend to, unfortunately, we tend to, and the Christian tradition, of course, does this too. The body is suspect, right? The flesh is weak or evil or whatever. And, and so we're inculcated with this idea that, you know, and we think of heaven like that too. You know, heaven is beyond the body, right? The body might die because it's temporary and maybe a dangerous place, a failed thing, but our angelic being is beyond the body. So we have that dichotomy between, you know, what's good and what's bad, and so often the body is considered bad. Plus, it's of the animal, isn't it? It's to do with the processes we would rather not think about. You know, the natural digestive processes and things like that that we all know happen, but we don't really like to talk about them. They're somehow of the beast in us rather than of the higher. But that's not really true, right?
No, actually, I think, you know, you talk about the scriptures talking about the body being, you know, a trap, or, you know, go to the Buddhist traditions and the body is Maya, and you go to the Vedic traditions and they talk about controlling the body, controlling your breath, controlling, you know, in many, many ways. And yet at the same time, in all of those different traditions, depending on where you look and how far back you go, you know, you can go to the Bible and it says the body is the temple of the Lord. You know, so, well, wait a minute. You just told me the body was a trap. How can it be a temple and a trap at the same time? But culturally, and the institutions of the church have really demonized the body and basically said it is, A, less than our thinking and less than our spirit. And, in fact, I would say that it is absolutely inextricably locked together with who we are. And at any point in time that we begin to say, hey, the body is not important, we are we're in trouble, because it's now gotten relegated to the shadow. We don't get to have our vitality, our joy, our sensuality, our and when you lock those out, you're now locking yourself out of your creativity. So and your ability to think clearly. So I think all of these things are very, very important, Paul.
And I think there's a move right now. I mean, I just read a thread last night of on the Facebook, you know, from young people, and it's interesting to read what young people are saying. I don't consider myself old, but I am old, like in comparison to their ages. But they were talking about the dissatisfaction with the positivity movement, you know, with this peace and love. And although it's good to be positive, you know, there's a dark side, a shadow side, and they want to be real and honest to that. And I thought that's wonderful, though, because, you know, we are more than just making it nice and happy and lighthearted. You know, we have to get down and dirty as well. We're embodied. And part of the healing is doing that, right? It's not try and hide from the messy bits within ourselves, if you like. The body can be messy, right?
Absolutely, and it can. And many of the stories that I talk about in the book are circumstances where the body and the primal needs and urges of the body for functioning well have gotten in the way, because there's been a battle between our head and our body. And I have a lovely little piece that I start off the book with. I'd love to read, if it would be okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's on page 8 in Reclaiming Your Body. It says, your relationships with other people throughout your lifetime, with your parents, your spouses, children, friends, and teachers, will shift as time passes and situations change. As long as you are alive, however, your body is always with you. It is so beneficial to have a strong, deep, intimate relationship with your own unique physical self. Your body is designed to guide you, keep you safe, and bring you full vitality and pleasure. It is the vehicle through which you create and manifest your thoughts and dreams into reality. In this book, you will discover how establishing and nurturing a healthy relationship with your body will allow you to reclaim those lost parts of yourself, tap into your body's wisdom, and better navigate your life.
Yes, beautiful.
That really says it all in terms of the whole purpose of what I've written here is to give people a how-to manual for coming home to themselves in a deeper way.
Yeah, very good. And to reiterate, it is a manual, and there's lots of techniques and guided meditations and other things in the book that makes it a good handbook for us all to really practice this in our lives. Before we talk about some of the body myths that you talk about in one of the early chapters, I'm reminding of a story about Teresa, not Mother Teresa, the modern saint, but Saint Teresa. And I think she was, well known as a mystic and somebody that prayed well. And at one point, she was sitting in the refectory of the monastery and eating some quail or partridge with gusto. And some of the other nuns were shocked, that she should be eating like this. And they said to her, Mother, we thought that you were so holy. We didn't think you'd be interested in eating food quite like this. And she turned to them and she said, listen, when I pray, I pray. And when I eat partridge, I eat partridge. And I love that story because it's the idea that, she had full integration, in other words, right? She didn't think she was so holy that she couldn't enjoy food anymore. When she ate, she ate with full pleasure, without making it a fixation. But I think we've lost this idea. When we talk about the body, we're often talking about indulging the body, aren't we? Mm-hmm. We eat too much, we drink too much, we have drugs, whatever. All the things that we do to stultify our bodies rather than enliven them.
Yes, and also I would like to point out that what St. Teresa is talking about there is that she was fully present in the moment. She was eating partridge, and she was loving it. In that moment, all she was doing was eating partridge. When mm-hmm. she's praying, she was fully in the moment of prayer. And so her prayers were deep and powerful. See, I love these kinds of elders, wise elders and saints, just imparting their wisdom so clearly because it's right there. You can't miss it. Excuse me, I'm eating partridge right now, and I am fully in this moment eating and enjoying that bird that gave its life for me.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, it's beautiful. But, I think we love it because we're not there often, unfortunately, we have ways that we avoid being present to what is, and I've noticed in the last 10, 15 years, on the streets of Fort Worth, which used to be a very laid back city. We always talked about going to Dallas for the crazy drivers, but now for some reason, the crazy drivers have come over here as well. And I think it's just, it's not just in Fort Worth. I think we're finding this all over the place.
The
speed of everything. I think the, probably social media, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, is has speeded all this up as well. But
we're
rushing around, aren't we? We're losing our sense of balance with our integrated bodies.
Yes, and also the distraction of doing much more than one thing at a time.
Yes.
And, the speed of technology, the amount of stuff that's expected of us, and the fact that people are plugged into their technology, you go anywhere now, and people are no longer talking to each other, with very few exceptions. They're on their iPhones. They're on their smartphones. Mm-hmm. And, it's a little wacko to me, but there you go. And God knows, I am absolutely capable of it myself. But I also know how to return to the moment when I need to and when I want to. And I know that it involves slowing down, dropping inside. And, that's really what this book is about, Paul. How do we really start to recognize the places where we are not in our bodies anymore? We're not really conscious of what we're doing. In fact, I start the book with a little body intelligence quotient, just a questionnaire, would take about 3 minutes for anybody to fill out. And it tells you pretty clearly, oh, look at this. I thought I was doing pretty well with my body, but my score is so low that I really need to go back and look. Do I really consider my body friend or foe? Is it something I have to do battle with? Something I have to control? Something I have to whip into shape? Is it something that betrays me regularly? Or do I really, have I befriended my body? Am I curious about its signals? Am I connected to it in any given moment to find out what's going on? So I start right there because, honestly, most people don't even know really, honestly, candidly, authentically, what their relationship with their body actually is. So we have to start there. And then, you know, I go on from there to really begin to talk about those five body myths that you were talking about, the ways we tell ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah, so let's just briefly go over some of those. Your first one is the body's too painful. What do you mean?
Well, many people, when they have had traumatic experiences before, but they, rather than dealing with them, they just locked them away because it was all they could do at the time that the trauma occurred. It was too overwhelming. And so the body very kindly locks it away, encapsulates it, puts the lid on it, and says, don't go there again. That was a very painful experience. Don't go there. And so oftentimes when people very first or second or third time they come to my workshops and I'm teaching them how to drop inside, if they've had a lot of painful experience, sometimes the first thing they run across is the pain. And if they haven't learned how to have more resources, like being able to feel their feet or their bones or their heart or their gut, they could feel like that pain is really all that's going on inside. And then it feels like too much.
Yeah.
And so, so part of what I teach is how to have the rest of their body, how to get the body as a container, how to fill their inner energy reservoir so that there is something there to hold and be kind and compassionate with the painful places that we all have inside because of the things that have happened to us.
You know, there's a wonderful song by Paul Simon and Garfunkel, you know, I Am a Rock. About,
yes.
You know, the person who cocoons themselves from reality and because it's safe, because it's too painful. And, you know, he's got his poetry and his cerebral stuff to keep him going, but that's all in his head, you know, but he can't come down into his body and connect. Because that's another thing with bodies, you know, what bodies do is connect, right? The eyes meet other eyes, the hands touch other hands, the bodies have intercourse with each other, you know, whether it's sexual or a hug or whatever. You know, the body wants to connect with other bodies. It's not meant to be separate, is it?
Absolutely.
And, you know, it yearns for that. And if we know that if a child isn't touched, for instance, you know, as a baby, irreparable damage can happen, right? Because it needs a huge amount of touch in those early months. So,
yes.
And I think that continues through our lives, doesn't it? We need to make that connection.
Well, and the only thing I would just want to add to what you just said is that what we're now discovering is that it is not irreparable, that you, because of neuroplasticity, there are ways to help people learn to connect in their lives. Again, now it takes work and it takes time, but there are healing methods now available that were not there many years ago that help people reclaim and come back and heal and begin to learn how to connect. And you are exactly right. The latest research, the attachment research, and Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory talk about the fact that connection is our birthright as human beings. Our body, mind, spirit craves connection. It's not something you get as frosting on the cake. It is the cake, damn it. You know,
yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Like it's not about the destination either, is it? You know, the journey is the destination, right? It's the same idea.
Yep. Yeah, you got it.
So body myth two, the body is mysterious and dangerous. And I think we've alluded to this earlier. You know, it has processes that are unknown to us, right? We're not thinking about how the blood is pumping. We're not working on our digestive systems. They just happen for us. And most of the workings of the body are unconscious to the conscious brain, and that in itself is kind of mysterious and perhaps dangerous, because we don't know what the heck's going on, right?
Well, and also, what if, you know, one of the stories that I tell in that body myth example is the fact that we can have emotions that are in our bodies that are locked away, that feel dangerous. Oh, my God, if I feel my anger, I might explode and kill somebody. Or if I feel my tenderness, I'm just going to get run over. When that sort of thing comes up out of the deep and overwhelms us, it's like, whoa, back off, Jack. I don't want to feel that. You know, and so that is the level at which the body holds things for us to remember. And at first blush, it can feel as though it's dangerous. Thank you very much. Painful, dangerous, scary. You know, and the next body myth, I think the next body myth has to do with sensuality and sexuality, right?
Yeah, well, let's hold off on that. So I hate to wait on sex, but we're going to have to. Just kidding, folks. We need to go to the break, and we'll listen to these messages from Unity. We'll be right back with body myth number 3.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support. Someone once said there are two ways to get to the top of an oak tree. Climb the tree or plant an acorn and wait. If we expect changes to happen in our lives, we may want to consider climbing. Plus, changes needn't be monumental. Sometimes it's as easy as an attitude shift. Life is what we bring to it. Do you have a job that seems less than exciting? When you walk through the door, bring joy with you. Life looks better when viewed through a positive attitude. Are you facing a health challenge or surgery? Get rid of your fears by focusing instead on Spirit working in and through you. When you remember that with God, all things are possible, your outlook cannot help but change. Today, wherever you go, whatever you face, do so with joyous expectations. Release your inner splendor and allow the light and love of God to guide your way.
This mindful moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. Finding time for the positive reminders in Daily Word is easy with the digital edition, perfect for smartphones and readers on the go. Give it a test run with our 30-day free trial offer. Learn more at unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
I will leave this world as it.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm talking with Suzanne Scolop-Durana about her new book, Reclaiming Your Body, and we're halfway through the body myths. And body myth number three is the body is seductive and leads us astray. And, of course, this has great impact in terms of those of us who are brought up in strict religious upbringings and the fact that the body is in some way subject to the devil's dictates or whatever. And if you shake your body, then you're dancing to the devil's music and all that stuff. Instead of enjoying ourselves and releasing, and as kids, we don't know this, do we? These are learned responses, I think.
Yeah, in fact, as children, we tend to play and have fun and be great until an adult in our life, or adults, or community, or religious background, begin to really put the lid on us. And that's actually some of the earliest trauma and learned behaviors that are very traumatic to live with day in and day out. Yeah.
And, I think a lot of us, in society have, sexual hang-ups because, our sexuality is a very tender and sensitive thing, isn't it, in some ways? It can be raging, but it's also tender, and I think many men experience this too. Men have to perform, so to speak, and there's a lot of anxiety around that. I think that's sort of not looked at very much because we don't talk about that, because we're men and we're supposed to be capable all the time, and so we do ourselves disservice by not being able to address some of our vulnerabilities, right? Part of this is opening to the vulnerability of our bodies, right? That it's strong and tender at the same time.
Absolutely. And people who can actually feel their vulnerability and feel their tenderness are actually stronger and more resilient than those who hold their vulnerability and their tenderness locked away and in their shadow, where it can really just raise its head and cause nothing but trouble in the long
yes.
run.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Which leads to body myth number four, which is the body is out of control, must be dominated, right? And, we impose things on our body, whether it be flagellation, like the Catholics, some Catholic sects do, or the Shiites like to whip themselves into frenzies too, or body control, the body needs to be mastered. Even the Hindus have yogis that are able to bury themselves alive and survive for weeks, or stand on one leg with their arms in the air or whatever. This idea that we have to have control over the body. And sometimes we put ourselves through terrible routines, whether, it's the cycle of, gorging and then purging, whatever, bulimia and anorexia, or other dysfunctions. We it's all part of this dominate the body, right?
And it's very sad because the body, if listened to, has a wisdom and a rhythm all its own, Paul, that is so wise and so capable of guiding us in a balanced way. I think that most of us grow up a long way from that and have to find our way home to that wisdom as adults, depending on what we were taught. And a lot of the role modeling that we get can be doubly or triply damning in terms of this kind of issue of needing to control the body. I have to watch everything I eat or I'm going to turn into a blimp, or I have to, all the different things that we do that cause us to judge our bodies, clamp down on it, don't feel that, over-exercisers, by the way, people who obsess exercise to the point where they injure themselves and are in pain but cannot stop.
Right.
That's a, That is a someone, and most of the time those people believe that if I slow down, if I'm not in total control and pushing, pushing, pushing all the time, I'm going to turn into one huge sloth, and there will be nothing left of me as I know myself to be.
Right.
That's, you know, that needing to control the body is a very sad thing because of that, because you lose the capacity to feel what brings you most joy.
Well, and the other side of that, too, is that we medicate the body, you know, overly much sometimes, so that we numb ourselves from really feeling, and we feel like we have to medicate ourselves because we're just not good enough, you know, otherwise, and get into this cycle of syndrome, you know, the syndrome cycle. I think more syndromes have been created in the last 30 years than in the previous 300, you know, and I'm not saying it's all bad, you know, it's no doubt there's some validity to it, but I think, you know, the medical profession, you know, is in cahoots with the pharmacological, you know, pharmaceutical profession, and you know, to provide all this need for pills, because we're swallowing way more pills now than we were back in the 60s, for instance. And
absolutely,
and then
and the other thing that's happening, which is really kind of crazy, is that the foods that we are eating, the processed foods we're eating, affect the brain in ways just as powerful and just as problematic as the chemicals, the pharmaceuticals that we're ingesting, causing long-term issues like diabetes because of the chronic inflammation that goes on when your blood sugar stays too high for too long. Many, many cardiovascular diseases now being found to be something that comes from stress combined with a very poor diet. And it is a very interesting piece how that all works for us and is really being seen now for what it is. And that's relatively new in terms of us really understanding not only the pharmaceutical industry, but the food, the processed food industry, and how it is affecting our conscious awareness and our ability to feel who we are, like really feel who we are and not be lulled into, a state of, what would we call it? You know, the state that you go, a stupor in a way.
Right.
Certain foods can take you into certain processed comfort foods, sugar, artificial sweeteners. It's a pretty, you know, you look over the whole picture of it, and if there weren't so many wonderful things going on in the world today, I would be very worried at this point just because of the number of challenges that the human system seems to have right now in terms of staying healthy and conscious.
And then the old-timey view of things, too, was that, you know, we are sort of walking heads, right? We have this appendage called the body, but most of the important stuff goes on, you know, under the cranium, you know, in the brain.
Yep.
And in the recent studies, of course, getting back to this idea that, and it's not a new idea because it's been rediscovered, it's not a new discovery, but there's wisdom in every part of the body. In fact, every cell probably is a wisdom center. But I know you spend a lot of the book talking about, you know, the key areas of our bodies that have wisdom. I think the chakra system of Hinduism speaks to this too. You know, that there's wisdom centers throughout the body.
Right.
But you know, it's not just about the brain anymore, right? There's there's wise parts of the heart, as you mentioned, and the pelvis, and your gut, and even your legs, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So this is fascinating, isn't it? I think we know this, though, and you have many phrases linked with each one. You know, I know it in my gut. Well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, there's the wisdom of that part of the body, isn't it? It's
yeah.
It's powerful, it's palpable, and in fact, it's more. It seems to be more real than some of the fantasizing that goes on in our wonderful brains, you know, which is great, but there's something very satisfying about a good gut feeling about something, you know, opening your heart. You know, these things are very, very beautiful, right? And of course, at Unity, we talk about, you know, taking that longest journey, as they say, from your head to your heart. It is a long journey, because so much of our society encourages us to be in our heads, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think I love that phrase in unity, the longest journey is from your head to your heart. You know, one of the things I've been teaching people about being in their hearts, being in their gut, being in your pelvis, being in your feet and legs, being in your bones for years, and what we're now seeing is that the research is kind of catching up with what I've been teaching, because it's showing that there are many, many different wisdom areas throughout the body. The heart math people have been talking about for decades. The enteric, the heart brain itself, and the neurophysiology in your actual physical heart, that when the heart is coherent in its rate variability, so they call it coherent heart rate variability, people's brains work better. So there's a signal from the heart that's being sent to the brain that makes a huge, huge difference in your capacity to be present and creative and strategize and think clearly. And yet it comes from the heart, not the other way around, not the other way around, which I just, that makes me grin from ear to ear. That, you know, the deposing of the king of the head is really, it's a key piece, because most of us were raised to believe that everything starts and finishes in the brain. It's the brain that thinks about it, and then it makes it happen. But what we now know is that it's the brain, yes, but it is absolutely also the heart, the gut, the bones, the feet and legs. All of these different parts of ourselves are constantly feeding information to the brain so that it can do that ultimate strategizing that it does so well. Yeah.
Right. So fully integrated, right? And where every part of us is valuable, in other words.
Yes. Yes, and that's the part that I talk about, having an integrated brain, having a brain that really appreciates all the different signals it gets from all the different parts of the body. So, yeah, this is a big deal for us in today's world, because there is so much that we will miss out on if we're not feeling our gut, our heart, our feet and legs, our bones. We really will miss a lot, and that's an important thing.
And you talk about ways to do this, you know, and you have three explorations, three practices, if you like, that you go up, and you have guided meditations along each one of these.
Yeah.
And the first one's opening awareness, second one's the core embodiment process, and the third is healing the internal resistance to life. So let's talk about these briefly. Opening awareness, I think that would be something we're already familiar with in Unity and folks who are on the spiritual path. You know that this is important to have that open, accepting spaciousness and awareness of things. But how does it appeal? How does it focus in your practice?
Well, I was raised with unity for a lot of my life, and it's a philosophical underpinning that I'm in total agreement with. So that open awareness that you all cultivate is one that is foundational to what we're talking about, except in my work, I'm actually asking people just to get a baseline for where they are in their body. What do you feel and what do you not feel? Where do you have places that you feel comfortable and easy? It's very easy to take your awareness into that area. You can be curious about it rather than judgmental. And then where do you have a little bit more difficult time? Where are you not as present? Where are the places that are painful, numb, that feel distant? So that opening awareness is a process of actually being honest with yourself and saying, oh, here's where I really am right now, rather than here's where I want to pretend to be or here's where I want to be. Here's where I actually am present right now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Vipassana, insight meditation, is very popular now in so many areas, and it speaks to that too. It's
Yes.
The ability to check in on ourselves and see where we are, both in our bodies and in our moods and in our thoughts, etc. You know, without Absolutely. Judging, but just open to deep listening, if you like, deep awareness to the body and to the processes, because we don't give ourselves the luxury of that sometimes. You know, we're so driven, we're pushing beyond it instead of being attentive to it. And it can yield amazing wisdom. You know, I think I love nature, and if I sit quietly in nature and I begin to resonate with the landscape and the feel of the breeze before me, and I begin to not only see things, you know, birds begin to appear that I hadn't noticed before, but also the inner voices, birds, if you like, of the conscious awareness come to me, you know, that we get lots of our inspiration. In fact, you have a quote here. It says, if you haven't received something, you know, what is it? I can't remember exactly the quote. If you haven't received some inspiration after running for 4 miles, you'll never receive it, or whatever. Or 4 hours, I think it was. Here we are. If you don't have any answers to your problems after a 4-hour run, you ain't getting them. Well, listen, buddy, you know, if you, and not many of us can run for 4 hours, you know.
Yeah.
But I think if you haven't had the answers, you know, walking around the block, you're probably not going to get it. I think, you know, when we do those, and it's the same in the shower, you know, it's when you're taking care of the busy mind through walking or through taking a shower, the deeper mind, not just the mind in your head, but the deeper mind within your body begins to speak to you, doesn't it, and teach you things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I think that's really great. And, you know, it's very, very interesting because the final body myth, the one about how the brain is so much brighter than the body and the body's just a dumb appendage, I think
right.
that body myth speaks to exactly this because, you know, I've had, and the more intellect, the more education people have had, the more likely they are to second guess the wisdom they get from their body moment to moment. And it's really astounding how deeply someone can feel something and know it in a session with me or in a class with me, and then the next day be back saying, well, that didn't really happen, or, you know, I've been thinking about it, and how do I know that's true? Well, you know it's true because you had such a deep felt sense of the veracity of it, the truth of it. How can you now at this point question it? But the mind, you know, that left-brained, rational, you know, the thing that values only what can be rationally approved and come up with, that part will question the wisdom that's in the body. And I agree with you. You said earlier that there's probably wisdom in every cell. You know, Dr. Upledger, who was my teacher and mentor in craniosacral therapy, absolutely said every cell in our bodies has wisdom. Every cell.
Mm-hmm.
No right. doubt about it. It's just waiting for us to tap into it to give you the information that you need.
Right. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So the next step is the core embodiment process. So what do you mean by that?
Well, the core embodiment process, I used to call this grounding and filling, and then we realized that it wasn't descriptive enough. And I realized that what grounding ourselves and filling with nourishing resources gives us is true core embodiment, meaning I now have the capacity to actually have a felt sense, a visceral sense of connection to my insides, to my inner landscape. And when you get that by grounding and filling, or by doing breathing of some kind, or however you get there, when you can truly feel, not just think about, but feel your insides, your inner landscape, that is the core embodiment process. And one of my favorite ways to do it is by grounding and filling and walking people through how to connect to the earth beneath us, how to work with receiving nurturing sensation from the earth beneath us. And that is where it goes for the most part, because most of us live in our heads. So people always say, well, why do you have to go to the ground to ground and fill? I said, well, because by and large, if we didn't start with the ground, you'd never make it below your neck. If I was trying to get you to ground and fill through your crown of your head, we wouldn't go anywhere. And I think that's really true.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, people are yearning for this, aren't they? You know, more and more people are going on vision quests or going on sweat lodges or, you know, journeys that lead them into their bodies, because they're yearning for that wisdom that that only those elemental qualities within us could bring. And that's wonderful, though, because we need it so badly. All right, number three is healing the internal resistance to life. What do you mean I resist life? What are you talking about?
We're talking about all those places that you're locked out of. We're talking about the parts of yourself where something traumatic that happened a long time ago or some habit that you have really has caused you to shut down, close down, and become less and less and less connected to life and just live in your head. And so I call that healing the internal resistance to life, because what I teach people how to do is become aware, that first exercise, opening awareness, where am I now and where am I not? The second thing, fill up the container of your being, ground and fill. Get that core embodiment so that you have a container, an inner energy reservoir for holding the parts of yourself that are in pain, holding the parts of yourself that feel numb, holding the parts of yourself that you feel locked out of until they come back into connection with you again, until they integrate with the rest of you, so that you now have more of yourself on board at the end. And it might just be one tiny layer, or it might be a huge shift, Paul, but really learning how to hold the places inside of ourselves where we feel anxious, where we feel afraid, where we feel parts of ourselves we don't like. These are the places that it's most important to learn how to hold and heal and bring back into connection with the rest of us, so that it's not in our shadow, so it's not draining us. Yeah.
Yeah, those parts of us that, you know, do drain us, we have a hard time being present to anything else but them. You know, we can't be present to others, maybe because, you know, this gets in the way all the time. And yet the more we try to do it, the worse it becomes somehow, mm-hmm. because the mind is trying to force it to happen. And until we can relax into it, right, until we can just be with where we are at any given moment, mm-hmm. we can't really let it go. It's not easy. It's not easy to do that sometimes, I think.
No, it's absolutely. And that's why, you know, most of the time people talk about just being with something that's traumatizing or being with something that was really hard to experience in the first place. And you've got to have more resources on board to do that. Just going back to those places that were traumatizing to begin with is re-traumatizing if you don't have new resources on board. If you don't have a bigger felt sense of who you are, then it just becomes scary. It becomes a bad trip. It becomes a flashback. But when you or I grow a deeper, wider container in our bodies, our inner energy reservoir is full, and we have new resources on board, an ability to ground, an ability to really hold whatever is going on within us, then we can heal. So I teach people, in a way, almost how to be their own therapist, if you will, by learning how to hold those spaces within themselves, one little experience at a time.
You have the story of the Navy SEAL, right, who was, you know, had this wonderful body and could do amazing things, and yet he felt crippled, you know, that is. He was always trying to measure up to the invisible yardstick of perfection that laid down by his father, or in his mind he'd internalized his, and so he was cut off from his real connection to his wife and kids, and I think this is a good story, isn't it? Because we laud those people, we say, oh my goodness, Navy SEAL, you know, they're perfect, they have the brains and the body and the skill and the courage, and yet they can also be weak and when they're cut off from that weakness, though, from that vulnerability, they're not really as effective as they might be, right?
Absolutely. And they're cut off from the inner navigational system that the wisdom in ourselves has to offer. It's almost as though our body is picking up signals from the universe all the time. And if we're at home inside of our bodies, we hear that still small voice of wisdom. You know, that's one of the keys, I think, in being truly wise, is to be at home in the navigational system of your body. So when someone says something to you that really touches your heart deeply, you're at home in your heart. You receive it. You're not existing behind a wall in your heart and it just bounces off of you. You're actually present there with that person. And there's a deep heartfelt moment in a circumstance like that because of that. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So I think of us, I think of ourselves in human form as being big receiving stations, and the navigational system inside our bodies is receiving life, information, signals all the time if we're home to receive them.
You know, the rest of the book is taken up, like we said earlier, with the six key areas here where we can embody wisdom, the heart, the gut, the pelvis, the legs and the feet, your bones, your brain. And I can get my head around most of those because, you know, we feel it. You know, I feel it in my bones. It was a gut feeling, whatever. But the pelvis is interesting. And I guess what you're saying is Elvis was right, right? It is about the pelvis.
Not only was Elvis right, but the whole marketing industry knows that if you want to sell something, you've got to make it sexy.
Uh-huh.
And if you can make it sexy, even if it's forbidden, you are going to sell stuff. People are attracted to the power of the pelvis. It's the engine of the body, the root chakra. It is a part of us that is, I think I called it the black sheep of the family, because in our culture, we have disowned our pelvises. We've disowned that primal life force, the engine of that can fuel all our deep inspirations if it's open, if we're open to it. Yeah.
But like you say, you know, and being facetious about Elvis to a degree, but it's about his willingness to embody, you know, dance. And I think we see that very much in the Middle East and in Asia. You know, you think of belly dancers, you think of some of the dancers in India, you know, very much in touch with that part of the body, and it's a glorifying of that part of the body. I think the Jews must have had it too, because, you know, they were the dancers of Salome and et cetera, you know, were probably, again, very sensual, but not just sexual. They were celebrating that, like you say, that I mean, it's the place of birth too, isn't it? It's the place we give birth to our new life forms here, our children.
Yep.
So it's immensely important, but it's sort of become, like you say, the black sheep. We don't want to talk about it too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's a great image from 40,000 years ago called Venus of Willendorf, and I think there's other images like it, but it's a goddess image, but the goddess has huge breasts and huge hips, and you know, not attractive like we would think in modern times. You know, we're going after these thin bodies. This was a big earth mother, you know, but she had a huge pelvic area, and again, very very fruitful. You know, gave birth. I'm sure it was an image of fertility as well. But this is part of the power here, isn't it, of the human species? And so to celebrate is important. Maybe it's too matriarchal for our patriarchal society to embody fully.
Well, that's a whole nother question, but yes, and it may be another book as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah,
we are definitely living in patriarchal dominance and times. So powerful women are not having, you know, they're not being burned at the stake anymore, but they are certainly, they are being challenged right and left in our culture today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for anybody that listens to this show, you know, I'm a big advocate for women and all the equal rights that we still don't have for women in America. let alone the rest of the world. So, we lift that up as there's still work to be done in that regard. We're out of time. In the 10 seconds left, tell us one word of wisdom that we can embody this week. That's putting you on the line, isn't it? What would you say to us? What would be something that's inspiring?
I would say to your listeners, slow down, breathe, drop inside, and feel your feet.
You're lovely. I love that.
Yeah.
It's a great mantra, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, very
down,
good.
Breathe, drop inside, feel your feet. And if you want to add even one layer deeper, feel your bones. Feel the deep recesses of who we are as human beings.
I love it. Yeah.
Great.
Very nice. Very nice. Let me say goodbye to Suzanne in a moment, but right now let me tell you about next week. Next week we're on the road for 10 weeks. Wendy and I are on sabbatical, and we'll be broadcasting from somewhere in the world. Next week, all being well, we'll be in the beautiful countryside of Bonnie, Scotland. So I hope to find some interesting folks to interview there, and that'll be interesting. And we'll see where we end up on our journey of sabbatical. But right now, I want to thank Suzanne for being on the show. Wonderful show and a wonderful book. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Paul. It's really been a delight and a pleasure.
And thanks for listening, folks. We appreciate you supporting this show and other shows on Unity Online Radio. Have a good week. All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.